You don't need a lot of money to do more with it. Join Padma Lakshmi, Viola Davis, and Fidelity's Women Talk Money team during our free Women's History Month series as we get real about ways you can start planning and saving for the future you want so you can feel good about your money every step of the way. Save your seat today at fidelity.com/WHM. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, member NYSE, SIPC.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Monica Reinagle. Welcome to the Nutrition Diva podcast. Joining me on the show today is registered dietitian nutritionist Leslie Schilling. She's here to talk about her new book, Born to Eat, and a little bit about the growing popularity of the baby-led weaning movement. You may have heard something about this. It's a new approach. Well, really, it's a return to a more traditional approach to feeding infants and young children. But this conversation does have some implications for the rest of us as well. I get an awful lot of questions from listeners about how to manage the introduction of solid foods for infants and toddlers. Parents and grandparents are understandably anxious about getting this right. And there's some conflicting information out there, not to mention a ton of lore and well-meaning advice that can get kind of overwhelming. Baby nutrition is sort of a specialty area of nutrition. And to be perfectly honest, it's not an area of particular expertise for me. But my colleagues, Leslie Schilling and Wendy Jo Peterson, both of whom are registered dietitian nutritionists, as well as mothers, have just written a new book called Born to Eat. Not only is this a fantastic resource for anybody who's navigating through this important phase of a child's and a family's life, but I love the relaxed and realistic approach that they take here. It's a much needed antidote to all of the dogma and stress that can accompany this topic. So I can highly recommend this book to you. And today, Leslie is joining me on the podcast to answer your most frequently asked questions about early nutrition and, in particular, baby-led weaning. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar with the baby-led weaning movement, can you just briefly describe what that is and how it differs from the way we've been doing it for the last 50 years or so?
It's funny because you mentioned that it's not really new. Baby-led weaning is letting baby self-feed the foods of the family. And what we do is we make those textures and shapes just a little bit more appropriate for them. For example, if they had a slice of steak or avocado or things like that, we would just make it where they could hold it and manipulate it. And once babies are developmentally appropriate, they're able to really self-feed, which grab or grasp their foods and start to use those innate skills that they already have. It's very counter-culture at the moment because we're so used to using traditional purees and babies being spoon-fed. So I think it does scare people a little bit, but there's really nothing new about it. And it's funny that we call purees traditional because they've actually been used less than whole foods.
Well, and I know that a lot of my readers are tying themselves in knots trying to make all their own homemade pureed baby foods. And that's, you know, like a whole other level of effort that may really just not be necessary.
Absolutely. And if people want to do that, I mean, there's nothing wrong with using some purees because it's a texture that baby needs to know how to navigate, but it may not be necessary.
So baby-led weaning is more than just a trendy new philosophy. There's some emerging research to support this approach as well. But I'm sure you've noticed as well, sometimes it can take a while for those clinicians on the front lines to catch up with new research. So I'm wondering whether parents ever face pushback from their pediatricians when they suggest that this is what they want to do.
Yes, absolutely. I have a particular client who, with her first child, she ended up not doing baby-led weaning, even though she was super gung-ho about it because her pediatrician was not supportive. And she was not supportive because she didn't know about it. Hmm. So she now has a different pediatrician, but it's very possible that, you know, healthcare providers just haven't heard of it. And that doesn't make it a non-viable resource or method. And there's a lot of positive research about using it right now. And it actually, the American Academy of Pediatrics, their health initiatives, which anybody can find on their website, actually promotes a self-feeding approach. And sometimes dietitians and parents and physicians don't even realize that. So sometimes we can use that lingo, self-feeding and baby-led weaning, a little bit interchangeably if that helps people kind of understand what you're doing.
Yeah, self-feeding doesn't somehow sound quite as revolutionary or alarming. So when people first start to learn about this approach, what are some of the things that they might find surprising about what they might read, for example, in your book, Born to Eat? Is there anything about this approach that could be considered controversial?
Oh, yes. Yes. I think there are a lot of things that could be considered controversial, and I think it's because people just don't know and haven't had experience with this type of feeding in a long time. So when you tell somebody to give baby like a medium cooked slice of steak or a scrambled egg or a slice of avocado, they might look at you like they're crazy, like, oh no, we need to spoon feed this kid.
Piece of steak for a 6-month-old baby?
Absolutely. See? but yeah, so what you do is you cook it kind of medium or a little, not too tough. You want them to be able to gum it, mm-hmm. but they have total control of it by cutting it in like a finger slice, looking like a finger so they can hold it and manipulate it. And if we don't push the spoon into their mouths, they're in charge of that. And a normally developing 6-month-old has the skill to handle solid textures. Whereas when we used to see guidelines that were 4 to 6 months, say a 4-month-old was not used to or not able to use or manipulate this type of texture. Whereas a 6-month-old is, if they're developmentally appropriate and have developed, you know, normally to that point, they can manipulate those solid foods.
So some of the problem may have been that we were introducing solid foods too soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you write in your book that, you know, it's perfectly fine if your baby just takes that little piece of steak and sucks on it.
Yes.
That's perfectly acceptable. What if they manage to get a little bit off and swallow it without chewing it? Is that okay?
Well, the reason you're doing more of a medium texture, one is if they are sucking it, there are studies that suggest that the degree of cooking a steak or not cooking a steak allows for that heme iron to be absorbed. And iron is a really important nutrient for infants beginning solid foods. And so they can, if they do manage to gum that enough to get some and swallow it, they're usually okay. That's why we don't want to make it like an overly cooked steak. So keeping that in mind, and we give recommendations on how to cook, how to slice. And there are a lot of ways that can make parents feel more confident about doing this.
Oh, that's important, because yeah. I think parents are nervous about this. You know, it feels like mm-hmm. that baby's brand new and you have an opportunity mm-hmm. to do it, you know, perfectly.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And the iron issue is something, you know, there are a lot of health professionals, even dietitians, that are like, but what about the nutrition and the possibility for deficiency?
Well, right. That was actually my next question. You know, like if the baby is making the decisions about what they're going to eat and what they're not going to eat, then how do we make sure that they are actually getting all the nutrients that they need? I mean, with a baby food or baby cereal, it's fortified. So at least we mm-hmm. know it's like a little vitamin pill, you know?
Exactly. Well, they still get to decide whether they're going to eat it. So it's not like, and this is so funny because a lot of people have in their mind, like babies standing by the grill, making their steak. it's really, I mean, obviously the parent gets to decide what is going to be offered. And we suggest that parents offer one iron-rich food, one energy-rich food, and one vitamin C-rich food or fruit and vegetable. So they've just got a little fill-in, just think about filling in the blank. So they don't miss any of these key nutrients. And a lot of these nutrients that come from whole foods versus, you know, say a fortified food, the bioavailability of that nutrient is actually better.
Can be higher.
And there are some studies that are really supporting this. The other controversial issue is choking.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many, like you said, like if a baby's gnawing on a piece of steak, are they going to choke? Not if it's given to them in a texture that is appropriate for them. Again, not overly cooked. It needs to be manageable for their hands so they can control it completely.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned choking because I think that that is perhaps the other big, fear that parents have when they evaluate this approach, or especially maybe the grandparents. But in the book, you make an important distinction between gagging. And when you described it, I thought like, oh yes, I've seen babies do that and I've overreacted. So you draw a distinction between gagging and choking. And you say that gagging process is actually, that's part of how they're learning how to manage, you know, the process of chewing and swallowing. Mm-hmm. So tell us just a little bit more about that, how we can feel comfortable and confident that, you know, that our babies aren't going to choke if we let them do this.
Right. And I will say the research suggests that choking among all feeding methods is pretty similar. It's really about certain foods. So certain foods increase the risk of choking and position, like if babies reclined or if they're coin shaped. So it's more the food and the delivery, the shape of that food versus the method of feeding, and sometimes actually forcing a food into baby's mouth increase the risk for choking. So choking is something that a lot of parents may never see, but it's very scary, and we a lot of times confuse gagging with choking.
Right.
And the gag reflex is where let's use that slice of steak again. Say baby does get a piece of steak that's too big, he may make a very scared face, and he'll cough or hack and try. You can tell he's trying to manipulate the food and will likely spit it out. That's a safety mechanism. Mm-hmm. And that means he's appropriate to know whether a texture is going to work for him or not. So I think that's great. But what happens is we as parents have to sit there and just watch and not freak out, because they can tell if we're freaking out, but we have to watch and just make sure that they're able to clear it, because if we're trusting them and not freaking out, they're more likely to trust themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, if baby is choking, it's very different. You may not hear sounds at all. The airway is blocked by the food. And again, that's more not necessarily related to a feeding method, you know, traditional versus baby led or self-feeding, but more certain foods, particularly raw apples. They're the number one culprit, which is why we say, let's not do a raw apple. Let's do a baked, or find other ways to really incorporate that. And luckily, my sister is a speech therapist who specializes in feeding. So we really used her her knowledge here in working through gagging and choking and all of that.
That's so funny. I also have a sister who's a speech therapist and who does a lot of swallowing work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. If you want to see real change, you need to be consistent, and hair care is no exception. Vegamore makes sticking to your hair care routine easy so that you can actually see the results you've always wanted. With a monthly subscription of their Grow Hair Serum, you'll never run low on the products that you need, plus it saves you money. For best results, you want to use this for at least 3 months to see visibly fuller, healthier, and thicker looking hair. I'm only on month 2, but the routine is super simple, and I like the way my hair is looking. I also appreciate that Vegamore products are free of harsh chemicals and are also 100% cruelty-free. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. And for a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/diva and then use the code DIVA at checkout. That's vegamore.com/diva and the code DIVA to save 20% on your first order.
So many teenagers waiting to be adopted from foster care feel like their lives are over. They've given up hope of having a permanent home and are terrified of aging out with no support system. Right now, more than 113,000 children are waiting to be adopted in the U.S. The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is dedicated to finding them the right family before it's too late. Learn how you can help at davethomasfoundation.org/learn more.
Doors take us to summers away or winter adventures and afternoon getaways. Your dedicated Fidelity advisor can help you open those doors by working with you on a comprehensive plan to help you reach your wealth's full potential. Because doors were meant to be opened. Visit fidelity.com/wealth. Investment minimum supply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Leslie, in your book, you include some resources to help parents educate grandparents and other caregivers on these principles that might be somewhat unfamiliar for baby-led weaning. Is this a major challenge for parents who are choosing this method of feeding?
I don't think it's a major challenge because a lot of the parents that are deciding to kind of take this route have done some research on the front end, have done their own studies about how to do this. For example, in my own life, there was a particular, my little girl went to a parent's day out and they looked at me like I was crazy when I said she can still feed. There are no spoon. I'm not sending a spoon. And they really looked like I was crazy. And they weren't, they were not disinterested. They just didn't know that this was appropriate. And it took just a little bit of, this is why we as a family and me as a nutrition professional, this is why we're doing this. And just a little bit of help to understand, people really get it and they were open to it. So we do offer some letters that can be copied or, you know, cut and paste, however you want to do it from the book to give to like healthcare providers or, say daycare providers, or, and even say you have a grandparent or an aunt or something that helps just explain it a little way and to keep them safe. So what we want to do is you want all the caregivers who are going to be involved in your child's life to really be on the same page so they can be safe. And most of all, so they can support your child self-regulating. So learning how to trust their own bodies around food and hunger and fullness.
Now, just to be clear, you're suggesting that for very small children, a spoon may not be appropriate, but we're not, eventually it becomes appropriate to teach them how to use silverware just a little bit later.
Well, actually, you can give them a spoon. Say if I were giving my little girl Greek yogurt, and what I would do is I might load the spoon because she may not be able to load it yet and then let her take it from there. Mm. So spoons definitely have a place, but not in the parent's hands necessarily.
I see. That's an important distinction. Mm-hmm. So at the other end of the spectrum of those who may be dubious about baby-led weaning, I've heard some reports about baby-led weaning groups and forums, you know, Facebook groups that can get really intense and dogmatic about what is and isn't the correct way to do this. So I want you to tell us a little bit by what you mean when you say what you chew is up to you.
This is something that I've jokingly said for years. I think it first came out with one of the dietary guidelines. I'm like, okay, this was a post that I did. But I love this phrase because everybody has an opinion. Health professionals have opinions. Some of them are differing, which explains why so many people are confused. People are so black and white about this method. It's either this way or that way, or all in or you're not. But really, it's up to your family, the parent, to decide what is best for you. So, you know, you get to be the person who decides, am I going to let them use a spoon? Am I going to let the childcare provider actually spoon feed her, but tell the childcare provider how to watch for signs of hunger and fullness so she mm-hmm. can maintain her responsiveness? So you get to decide how you feed your child. You're the expert of your home and family. And what we try to do is give parents the information, which is evidence-based, and they get to decide what's right for them. Like, so if they decide that part of it's going to be using a spoon, sometimes puree, sometimes solids, that's really what works best for a family. And we sure don't want a mom to feel like they're doing something wrong or a dad to feel like they're doing something wrong because they're really in charge. I always like to say, I choose the cupcake. I'm going to eat a cupcake at a birthday party and it fits within my parameters of health. So what you chew is up to you and your family.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we see that black and white mentality in a lot of areas of nutrition, don't we? Not just children's nutrition and baby-led weaning, but
absolutely. I mean, health and I think the health and pleasure and learning how to appreciate our bodies and food, it really comes with living in the gray. You can't be on the black or white side of that.
Right. So finally, Leslie, how could adopting this approach and doing baby-led weaning affect a child's eating habits or even their attitudes about food later in life? Or could it even have an impact on other members of the family, like older siblings maybe?
Well, and this is one of the main reasons that we're so happy that Born to Eat came to life is because, you know, I've worked in my career for about 15 years doing counseling and sports nutrition and disordered eating and working with families and pediatrics and realize it all comes full circle. So if you have a parent who has some issues around food, it's possible that they are contagious. And so what we really wanted to do was take this feeding method that supports self-regulation and attunement from baby's first bite and teach the whole family how to get around that and support it. So it's listening to your internal regulation system. So when am I hungry? When am I satisfied? When have I had enough? And taking the whole family on the journey really can help, I think, everyone just become healthier and more mindful in the process, which means you can leave out phrases like just a few more bites or no, you know, no more cookies. So, and parents are still the nutritional gatekeepers. They get to decide what's offered, when it's offered and where it's offered. But the kids get to decide how much I'm going to eat and how much. And that's, we really support, you know, all of Ellen Satter's work too in the division of responsibility. And we think that's important for the entire family to break away from our dieting culture and use their own nutrition intuition.
Yeah, I think we don't realize as adults how much we project our own food issues and insecurities onto our children. And you know, we're laying down the groundwork for their lifetime relationship to food. So this seems like so much healthier a way to introduce kids, babies really, to the pleasures and the responsibilities, you know, of eating well and taking good care of ourselves.
Absolutely.
Leslie Schilling, thank you so much both for this wonderful resource that you and Wendy Jo have created for us and for your time today. The book is called Born to Eat, and you can learn more at the book's website, which is borntoeatbook.com. And you can also find Leslie and Wendy Jo on your favorite social media platforms. They're at Born to Eat Book. That's the handle, Born to Eat Book. So you can find them on Facebook and Twitter and all the rest. And of course, we'll have links to all of that in the show notes, which are at nutritiondiva.quickanddirtytips.com. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks again to Leslie for joining us.
Thank you.
And we wish you all the best with your book.
Thank you so much.
And now for all of you listening, have a great week and remember to eat something good for me.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.